Meet me at stage door.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to PS Meet Me at Stage Door. So today we have a little bit of a different episode for you. We're going to be trying something new, something super exciting. But before we jump into it, I'm going to hand it off to Libby for our bulletin.
Before we get into the news of this week, both Tori and I would like to acknowledge the Black Lives Matter movement in America and around the world, following the tragic death of George Floyd. It is so important that we as a community listen and learn how to be better allies both in our home country and overseas. Making sure to give our voices where it matters to help fight against systematic racism, we will hold ourselves accountable to implement this into our daily lives now and for the future. We understand that we can never fully understand, but we see you, we hear you, and we stand with you. You can follow the links in our bio to see how you can help too. In other news, we are excited to see some new productions and works coming out. Who's Your Bag Daddy, a musical following the events leading up to the 2003 invasion of Iraq, will be performing an online production from the 24th to the 28th of June for 5 performances only. Now you can check out more information, including ticket prices and where to watch, on their Instagram at BagDaddyMusicalAU. An exciting Australian musical currently in its workshopping phases is Vows, A Song Cycle. You can follow their journey to creating a show on Instagram at Nash Daily and Goldfinch and support them by donating to their GoFundMe page. Also coming to a screen near you is Oliver Alker's production of The Big 10, the online edition, who is actually going to be a guest on our podcast in an upcoming episode, so make sure you keep your ears out. Tickets will be on sale Friday with the shows on the 25th to the 27th of June. Make sure you guys check out their Instagram at TheBig10AUS for more information. Now back to you, Tori.
So today we're going to be doing something new, something a little bit different. We are going to be doing a deep dive. This is going to be the first time that we're doing a deep dive. Pretty much what it's going to be is we are going to pretty much just be diving in deep to a discussion of a show of our choice. And today that show is going to be Little Shop of Horrors. And we are joined by yes! our amazing, amazing guest, Miss Heather Campbell. Say hi, Heather.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me on. This is very exciting and cool.
I'm so excited.
I know, we are so excited to have you. So Heather is a colleague of ours who is a very active member of the theatre community, not only as a performer, but as a director and a teacher as well.
Making her the perfect person for us to bring in today. So before we get started, I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about Little Shop, and we're going to give you a little bit of an intro to what Little Shop is if you're listening and you've never heard the musical before. So, Little Shop of Horrors is a horror comedy rock musical with music by Alan Menken and lyrics by Howard Ashman. The musical premiered off-Broadway in 1982 before moving off-Broadway to the Orpheum Theatre, where it ran for 5 years. The original musical was loosely based on the low-budget 1960s comedy film of the same title. Now, before we go any further, I will let you know that there is a spoiler warning. We will be talking about the plot of Little Shop. We will be talking about everything that happens. So if you have not seen Little Shop and you don't want spoilers, this is your spoiler warning.
So for those that aren't super familiar with Little Shop of Horrors, the show takes place in Skid Row, where poor orphan Seymour works at Mushnick's Skid Row Florist, a rundown flower shop owned and operated by cranky Mr. Mushnick, alongside Audrey, a tall, beautiful blonde who is in a relationship with the abusive evil dentist. While Seymour was browsing the wholesale flower district, a sudden eclipse of the sun occurred, and when the light returned, a mysterious plant that looked like a large Venus flytrap appeared. Seymour, who was secretly in love with Audrey, names the plant Audrey 2 after her. He bought it and took it back to the shop, where it began to shrivel and die, until Seymour discovered to make it grow, it needed blood. And hence, the story truly begins. I think that's all we really need for now in terms of the synopsis, because we will be going in much deeper into the plot throughout this episode. So to give you a bit of a context as to why we chose Little Shop of Horrors for today's and for our first deep dive, pretty much Heather is our old boss, and pretty much we would spend I don't even know how long in the box office chatting shit pretty much about Little Shop of Horrors.
Exactly. So I guess we wanted to start off today by, you know, because you're so obsessed with Little Shop and you love it so much. We've got to know, where did this start? Where did this obsession start? Have you been in the show? Have you seen so many of the, like, the shows? What is it?
Okay, so I first encountered Little Shop of Horrors when I think I was like maybe 12 or 13, and I was going to a performing arts school on the weekend, and I got given Somewhere That's Green to learn as a song.
And of course, all girls do.
Yeah, so you're given you Somewhere That's Green. And I had never heard of the musical. At the time, I thought I knew a lot about musicals, but I really only knew sort of like the big, big ones. And I got handed this piece of music, and I thought that it was such beautiful imagery, and it inspired me to find out more about the show and about the context of the character and things like that. So then I think I first watched the movie, the non-musical movie, and was like, what is this weird thing? Like, I don't know how what I've signed up for here.
Where did this beautiful song come into this completely horrific thing?
Yeah, because the movie is quite strange. The non-musical movie is quite strange. So I watched that and then sort of just went, okay, and forgot about it for a little while. And then when I was in high school, we were doing a production of Little Shop of Horrors.
Okay. I thought you were in it.
So then we do a production of Little Shop of Horrors, and it really comes back into my life. And I'm like, isn't that that weird movie that I watched? Anyway, at this point, we all get handed the CD to have a listen to it and, you know, decide if you want to audition or not. And I took it home, listened to the CD, and I just became obsessed. Like, listened to it over and over and over and over and over again. Like, I had it loaded on my iPod, and I remember, like, one of my friends looking over my shoulder being like, what is Doo Doo by Alan Menken? I've never heard of this song. And I'm like, you don't even know. It's so good. So, yes, then I was in a production, which was amazing but also terrible, because I was one of the Greek chorus members. I was Chiffon, which is an incredibly racially inappropriate thing for me to be cast as. So for your listeners' clarification, I am a Caucasian redheaded woman who cannot even slightly pass for being African American.
Not at all.
It was one of those great things that high schools do where they're like, yeah, ignore the racial questions, just throw the students at it. And and then just from then onwards, I was like, it had a special place in my heart. And so I've been really invested in listening to every recording that comes out. I've been to see a few productions.
And you have thoughts.
That face you're pulling right now.
I have thoughts about, I saw the production at the Hayes and loved it, and it then transferred to Sydney Theatre, and it was glorious and loved it. And I just think it's a really special show.
It is such a fun musical, and it's something that's done by so many, especially like community theatre, high school theatre, because it's a small cast.
Yeah.
And it is really fun. Like, I was listening to it today driving to the glorious IKEA for the first time in probably like months that I've listened to it, and it just came back. I was like, oh, I just want to do this. Like, I don't even care. I will be a street lamp. I just love the music in this show.
I do, and I think people mistake it for being an easy show.
It's not an easy
show. Because it is quite funny. And people go, oh yeah, that's an achievable thing we can do. Like, we'll definitely do that. And I think people put a lot of thought into like, oh, what will we do about the puppets? And you can hire the puppets quite readily, like the three Audrey 2 puppets. And I think people think that's the thing that you need to make it a good show. Right. And I think it's got a lot of other things going for it, and a lot more depth that it gets kind of overlooked for. But it does. It gets put on a lot, so you get to see it in many iterations, and it kind of seeing each one you go, ah, I'll take something from that, and I really like that element, and I don't know, I put it together in this super production that one day I hope I'll see. I was really hoping to see the off-Broadway one that's currently, well,
right?
On
hiatus. Oh, yeah.
I got so excited.
As in the one with Jeremy Jordan?
Yes, the one that, well, is it him yet? I thought it was...
I think he's coming.
Still?
He's coming.
Which we will get into later because we have so much to say about that.
That's the production that had Jonathan Groff in it.
Yeah, so the new Broadway production was Jonathan Groff being Seymour, Tammy Blanchard as Audrey, and Christian Ball being Oren Scrivello, the dentist.
One of the things we kind of thought would be kind of fun to discuss is, if you could, what would you change about the storyline or the characters?
I don't know that I would really change anything about it, which is funny because I have a big history of going to see shows and being like, well, if you just change this element of the plot, wouldn't it be better?
Yes.
Wouldn't it be better?
like you're wicked.
My wicked rewrite. I'm like, wouldn't it just be better if Act 2 never happened? Like, it's just... Little Shop is one of those shows that I actually don't do that about. I really like the story, the progression. I think it all makes sense to me. Mm. There's nothing about it that I go, well, that's odd and why would anybody make that choice? I think...
I agree.
In terms of sometimes production choices, there are things that if I ever get my hands on directing it, as is one of my life goals, there are things that I'm perhaps interested in doing a little differently to the standard production.
Yeah.
So things like, one of the things that we have talked about previously is when the new recording came out with Jonathan Groff and Tammy Blanchard and Christian Ball, it's quite different, particularly Jonathan Groff's take on the character is very different to the standard Seymour.
Yeah.
But Tammy Blanchard, as much as I adore her, I feel like she's giving a very classic Audrey, and I don't know that the two of those sync. So I'm like, does Audrey have to be played that way?
Well, I actually think that she almost does.
Oh.
Because she's a represent... I know, going against it. I originally, you know... asked me a couple days ago and I totally would have agreed with
this.
You.
I was waiting for this to happen.
But I was just like looking into it a lot and I watched it last night just to refresh. It's really, because I was looking at it and it almost parallels, the story parallels like Nixon and his like presidency. And it was really interesting looking at it because it's paralleled. And so Audrey's really just a metaphor for like America. You know how she, at the end, she's like, she wants him to feed, like she wants to be fed to the plant. She's like, no, I want you, the best for you. So feed me to the plant. That's like the blindness of the mass of America. So I think that's what she is. So I don't know. For me, I think that she almost does need to be that really stupid, blind. Like it's a character chore. It's 100% a character chore. And I would love to see her done.
Yeah.
If it wasn't that, I think I would love to see it done a bit, you know, differently. Yeah.
But I think a person can't play a metaphor, right? You can't play, I'm a metaphor for the loss of the American people's faith in their president. Like, that's not a playable action.
No, it's not a playable action.
I feel like I kind of fall in the middle of these two because, so I think that the way that she's portrayed is kind of a representation of where she's from. So she's from Skid Row. She's from, like, if you don't know what Skid Row is, it's not necessarily a particular place. It's pretty much an impoverished urban area in, like, North America. And so when I hear her, that's exactly what I picture. I picture where she's from. I know what she is, but it makes me feel like she's got so much more.
But here's the thing. They're all
yes,
from there.
That's true. They are all from there.
They're all from there, and she's the only one with that accent. Like, why is she always the only one with the accent?
But I do feel like it does dumb her down more than she is. Like, feel like her action in the show, she knows what's happening. She knows what the dentist is doing, but it's the fear of it. So many people have said to me before, I'm like, well, she doesn't realize what the dentist is doing because she's dumb. I'm like, no, she knows what she's doing, but she's scared and she's also in love.
She sings a whole song about it. She sings a whole song about how she's only ever had bad relationships. Like, that she's aware of that. But I think it's just... I think it's actually, for me, it's not that the character can't be innocent or has to be played like a super savvy woman, but it's that people seem to be really stuck with the voice. Like, that voice is always the same. Yeah. Any production you go and see of Little Shop, everybody does the Audrey voice in quote, unquote, air quotes, which don't really work over the meaning of a podcast, but I'm air quoting the Audrey voice.
When I was trying to find clips of people singing somewhere that's green, I think I only found one or two that didn't use that voice, and it kind of just makes you go, oh. It makes it feel quite different, but not bad.
No, it's not bad. I think that it would be so amazing to see Audrey in a different light, as in not done with the voice. But it is also a very camp show, and that almost brings an element to it as well. It's got kind of, I don't know about anyone else, but when I was watching it, you know the way that the set is and everything? It's so bright and vibrant and in your face. And it kind of reminds me of like Sesame Street on steroids. It's like there's some plant, there's like puppetry. It does match it, but I definitely think it would be an interesting to see a completely different Audrey. I think it would just depend on how the production was done.
And I don't know if it would work because I've never seen it, but it's just when I see it, and particularly when I listen to the new recording, one of the questions I asked was, does she have to speak that way? Does she have to have that accent? Because it's a character trope that is really ingrained with the show. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I've not seen the libretto for years. And I'm like, is it a scripted thing? It's a scripted thing. Is it a choice that you have to make? Can it be made differently? Yeah. I wonder. And maybe it wouldn't work. Maybe it wouldn't work, but it's one of those things that I'm interested that I never see anyone stray from it. And people's depiction of the dentist changes and Seymour changes. And why is Audrey deprived of the ability to be seen differently or for an actress to put a different spin on it? And I think it depends on what you're going for in the show, right? But I think the relationship between Audrey and Seymour is often the real crux of the show. And that's why they changed the movie ending, because they were like, oh, it's...
Right?
Yeah, so like when they changed the movie ending and they didn't die, it was because film audiences were so invested in these two people that they were absolutely horrified that they got fed to the plant and that was the end.
I didn't even connect for the longest time, literally until researching. I have seen musical productions in theatres and I've seen the movie. And I didn't connect the dots of the fact that they had changed the ending. And I was like, because when they did the first test of it to an audience with the movie, they were like, no. They were like, this is so upsetting and it's so dark and it's so horrific that it needed that happier ending of she goes in, but Seymour saves her, rather than the absolutely horrific but amazing ending of the musical where they all die and plants take over the world, or at least they take over Skid Row.
Yeah, but I think theatre, the difference is also like a theatre is even with a super tragic ending, you've got that upswing of like, but they come out to bow and there's a reprise and you get that kind of upswing. In a movie, you're just left with like, then that's the end, the credits.
But also, like, Seymour wasn't left with, like, if they do that ending, the whole thing is that, you know, it's almost that fame thing and the greed that is there, and that there's no consequence. There's no consequence to his actions. Audrey deserves better.
Justice for Audrey.
Justice for Audrey.
We should get a hashtag going. Yes. And it can be on many layers. She deserves better man. She deserves her own voice. Like, hashtag justice for Audrey. And look how long we've spent talking about her.
I know.
She's great. She's a great character with, like, many nuanced points to her. Like,
but another thing that I would love to talk about that I know, Heather, we've spoken about before is that a lot of the productions in Sydney use the same puppets, for every show.
Yeah.
But something that I love and I think is amazing, like the photos that I saw from production of Little Shop of Horrors in Pennsylvania at the Fulton Theatre back, I think it was in 2018, where Patrice Covington actually played Audrey too. I love the idea of actually them not being a puppet and being like the way that, like, looking at the photos, the way that Patrice got to portray that, she almost looks like this version of like poison ivy on drugs. Amazing. Yeah. Like, it was amazing. And I found so many versions. Like, I even found a version with a drag queen called Vicky Vox Slay.
That would be amazing.
As Audrey too. And she's this, like, retro. She's got pin curls happening. She's, like, psychedelic colors. I love it. It's like... It brings this entirely different personality because it's like, you know that they're the plant. Like, you know that.
Yeah.
You know that. You would have to be quite literally blind to know that these people are not being the plant. Just in general, guy or girl, whoever, I think you just got to cast whoever suits the role best. But I saw one today, which was amazing, and I watched a video of it. It was from a high school production in America, and we're pretty much, so she was playing Audrey 2, and when she becomes full size, you can't see what I'm doing physically right now, but she was pretty much in the pod, and when she started singing Feed Me, she opened up the pod and she was just there.
Yes.
In this like gorgeous
Big
purple
reveal. I love that.
Oh. Yeah, and every time she ate someone, she would swallow them in and the doors would close.
Yes.
Of the pod. And I was like, yes, I love this.
Him.
And I love... Audrey too is such a sassy character.
Totally.
Oh, so sassy. And I love being able to see, like, whilst I've seen a few different iterations of the puppet, you just get so much more expression having a person there, because you're like, the puppet is great and it's funny and it's a good little like joke with it. And I think that if it's what you're going down the path of, do it. But having that person there to be like literal the physical representation of this sassy otherworldly plant is just, it's a completely different story.
100%.
And I think also they're such a key player in the story, right? And the whole thing is that Audrey 2, it's all a manipulation so that to make him famous, not for him and not so he'll give him blood, but so that they can get the plant to spread and take over the world, right? It's this alien plant that wants to take over. So the character is playing a long game of wanting something, and I think if you let the audience see the person playing it, and it could still be incorporated within a puppet, you get that push and that back and forth between Seymour and the plant.
Yes.
And also the chiffon, Renette and Crystal, they are part of the plant at different parts. Like during supper time, they're also singing, like, you know, and encouraging him to feed things to it. And I think if you could find a way to work them into it as well, like it's
that
much,
would be so cool.
It's a growing entity that would be cool to play with. But
it'd be cool to have like the villain, but then like a pussy. It's almost like you could do
totally.
A cool,
like
dancey kind of, like you could have like a really cool vibe. Oh.
Yeah. It's like Ursula and her eels, like that kind
of... that vibe.
That's the exact kind of vibe that I get. Like, I've seen pictures of various different productions and, like, where they are in almost, like, where the little gospel girls are in almost mini Audreys.
Oh.
Yeah, totally. Like,
and I think that it's...
I love that.
Great, and I love it so much. And I think it's such a good option to, have that physicality of it and the way that people play with it.
And someone's working so hard at that puppetry too. I want to, like, so many puppets on stage, you get to see the puppeteer and the puppet. So you think of like Timon in Lion King or Olaf, or if you go see Warhorse, you can
or
see
Avenue
people.
Avenue Q.
Yes, Avenue Q. You can see people and the puppets, and it gives you that connection of the human emoting and also gives the puppet more life. I think I would love to see Little Shop have more of that, because the person who is poor person who's operating that Audrey 2, they're working so hard, and I know they get to come out for a bow, but seeing that symbiosis of the voice and the physicality, I think would be a real,
I know,
it could only be a plus to me. And I think what you were saying before about the reveal, like when Audrey starts to talk, I think it makes total sense that it's a puppet in the first couple of stages, that there be a puppet around them, but when the plant starts to talk, there being that revelation of being able to see the human voice. Although one of the things that I really loved about the production that was at the Hayes and then went on to the Rosalind Packer was that the guy who played Seymour was also Audrey 2's voice.
Oh.
So he was doing both.
Oh, I didn't see that production.
Which was a really... Yeah, oh, it was mind-blowing. So he was...
How would they do Feed Me?
Yeah, so he was like, I believe that they had done some pre-recording stuff, yeah, but you could see him, and it gave it this really interesting twist mental of, like, health. Was the plant ever really talking? Was it his own desires? Like, and I actually didn't notice because it was so subtle, because he'd, like, be looking at the plant and singing, and so you couldn't really see. And someone else in the audience who'd already seen the show pointed out to me that he was singing both, and I was like, my mind was exploding. So that was a really cool twist on it as well.
I love that.
On the note of explosiveness, we're going to shift it now. Explosions. We're going to shift it now to a little, I guess you could call it game. Not really a game. We're going to do...
Oh, God.
We're going to do...
I'm not prepared
for this. Two truths and a lie. So what happens is there are going to be two truths to what I say, and there's going to be one lie. Now, these are all about Little Shop of Horrors, so it'll be really interesting. I did find some really interesting fun facts, so I hope you guys enjoy this. So you're going to get...
Are we going to, like, buzz in for this?
I think you can both say which one you think is the truth and which one you think is the lie.
Oh, okay. Yep. I get what you mean now.
Alrighty. So, this is the first one. Number one, Little Shop of Horrors is the only movie that stars both comedy legends Steve Martin and Bill Murray. Two, Ariel's I Want song was used as inspiration by the writers, who often jokingly called it Somewhere That's Wet. Three, the movie inspired a board game by Milton Bradley called Feed Me, in which players had to drop marbles in the giant flytrap's mouth. Which one do you think is incorrect?
Can I just ask a quick question? Bill Murray was in Little Shop of Horrors?
Well,
oh wait, I guess you I don't can't even know. Ask that question.
Yeah, I can't answer. What is the oh two truths and what is the lie? So you just tell me what you think the lie is.
I'm now trying to think who...
I reckon one is the lie. I reckon Bill Murray and Steve Martin must be in another movie together.
Yeah, I also... I've got to agree. I feel like I've seen them a lot together.
Unless Little Mermaid... Yeah, Little Mermaid was written after it, so that's fine. I feel like that makes sense.
I feel like the game could exist.
I mean, a board game is nutty, but sure. Go with one.
Oh, God. I'm going to go with one, too, actually. Yeah, I can't lie. I'm going to go with one.
Oh, guys... They're all true.
Oh!
Oh my God! Wait a second.
I love Libby now trying to figure out what she's done.
So, basically, The Little Mermaid came after Little Shop, and I switched it. Yeah. It's actually that Little Shop was first, and so they used Somewhere That's Green to inspire Part of Your World. But basically, number two was the lie. Okay, number two, this is second one. This is the last one. Okay, number one. The filmmakers originally offered the role of Audrey to Madonna before casting original stage star Ellen Green. Madonna wanted the part but couldn't commit due to her touring. Two, the film cost nearly $30 million, and at the time, it was Warner Brothers' most expensive movie. Number three, Ellen Green originated the role off-Broadway and was then cast in the film adaptation.
The third is false. I feel like someone's screaming at me right now that I'm so wrong.
I can see them offering it to Madonna. I can see that being a choice. And I thought it was the most expensive movie. So then I would have to lean towards the third one as well. But I thought that Ellen Green was it off Broadway. But maybe there was someone before. I'm so confused. I'm just going to diversify because Tori said... Three, so I'm going with one just to, like, you know, shake it up.
Okay, guys, the lie was it's number one. Yeah, that's a lie, but it's not a complete lie. So they actually originally offered it to Cyndi Lauper.
Oh.
Yeah, I just changed it to Madonna. So Madonna was in consideration. Like, it was kind of gossip that Madonna was in consideration for the role, but they actually offered it to Cyndi Lauper. Guys, I've just confused everyone with this game, and I should just not do two.
I think this is just not the game for us.
But good job, guys. Actually, Heather won that. Yes, Heather. There's a winner. It is Heather.
Something that I think I would just love to deep dive into, because I am a very, very big Jeremy Jordan stan. And when it was announced that he was being cast as in the new production in New York, that he was going to be taking over as Seymour, people freaked out. And the main response he got was, Jeremy Jordan is too hot. He's meant to be like ugly and meant to be like a geek. And Jeremy Jordan's response was literally taking photos of himself in glasses being like, what do you want from
Well, I love that people exploded over it, but like, yeah. Jake Gyllenhaal has played Seymour, and that man is like probably the best looking human alive. So if people can let it slide that Jake Gyllenhaal played it and is just a total babe, then maybe Jeremy Jordan should be extended the same courtesy.
I don't think Seymour's meant to be ugly. I don't think he's meant to be like the hunchback and just totally unlovable. I think he's meant to be kind of meek and a little bit meager and a little bit unsure of himself. But I don't think he's meant to be like this horrifically unattractive person.
I think also it's, you know, if you were right for the role and you just happen to be attractive,
like,
what
they've got to go with,
you know,
who is right for the
but
role.
But then also the opposite goes for that. Are they just, okay, this is the opposite end of that, which I understand why there was a little bit of backlash. Are they just casting Jeremy Jordan because it's Jeremy Jordan and he can get bums in seats? Or are they casting Jeremy Jordan because he's necessarily the best for the part and was the best at audition?
So I feel that's a more interesting argument, right, is I don't have a problem with Jeremy Jordan's level of attractiveness Jonathan Ruff is no toad either. Like, he's perfectly pleasant to look at. But I guess, for me, I think Jeremy Jordan reads as someone who knows they're attractive.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So when I think of him and his general go-to character, he's usually a little bit smarmy, quite cocky, super confident. These are the roles that he's known for playing. So I think that's why people go, oh, do I see you as a Seymour? Like a guy who's got no game and a crippling crush on a woman that he can't possibly tell her about. Like, that can be easily manipulated by a plant with this, like, I'll help you be cooler. I think he reads as quite cool naturally. Like, everyone has a natural kind of vibe that you give off, and people can definitely work against that and transform themselves in character, but I've not seen him do anything, and maybe I'm not as familiar with his work, but I've not seen anything where I'm like, oh yes, he's very vulnerable and insecure.
To contradict to that, I don't know if either of you have seen the TV show, the CW show, Supergirl.
No, I haven't actually.
He plays a character called Quinn, and he is, whilst I think, a slightly cockier version of Seymour. So I have seen that side where I can see him. I wouldn't necessarily be of all the actors in the world, he wouldn't necessarily be like my first pick going like, yes, that is Seymour. That is the perfect Seymour. But I'm like, I can see it.
But was he the best? Was he the best choice? That is the question, though. And we don't know that. We're not the director. We're not on the panel.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well,
I'm like,
the best choice, because their first choice is Jacob. So, like, you start with, like, our ideal choice is up here. And then from there, we find
an alternative.
Yeah.
I think it's always great for actors to push themselves and try new Definitely. Characters. And you don't always want to be playing the same character. So I think it's good for him to stretch. And I hope he pulls it off. I hope I get to see it is what I really want, is I want to see the show.
Well, we did want to also touch on some of your favourite songs from the show. So what are you guys, you know, what are your favourite songs?
I mean, I straight off the bat know what my favourite song is, but I don't.
Heather, you
Every
go first. You tell
it,
us
like,
your favourite song.
My favourite song is... My favourite song is Skid Row, if I really had to pick one. Yeah. I think my favourite song is Skid Row. Because whilst it's not the very first song in the show, because there's the prologue, I feel like it is just sets the tone phenomenally. It's these introductions to the characters. I particularly, like, I feel like my solidification of that being my favourite has come from listening to the new Broadway cast recording.
I literally just downloaded it.
I die for when Jay Groff sings, "Poor on my life, I've
poor.
Always been poor." Like, I'm just like, yes!
Literally, downloading as we speak.
Oh my god,
it's so good. And I have this, playlist called Banging Broadway, where I put like my favorite sort of go to listen to on repeat songs in, and Skid Row is the one from Little Shop of Horrors that's in there.
Yeah.
So I do also love like Feely and Summertime, and just there's so many. But if I really had to pick, I'd go Skid Row, because you get a little bit of almost everything except Audrey 2.
Yeah, that's so true.
I was literally about to say Feed Me is, I think my favourite. Me too. I love Somewhere That's Green, and I love the imagery that you get with Somewhere That's Green, but Feed Me is just that one that I always, along with, I would have to probably say Skid Row as well, but Feed Me is just the one that I always go back to, like, the comedy in it, and just, like,
the sound, the R&B. I just now have give this
image. I can't get the image, now that you've put it in there, Heather, of Seymour singing both Seymour's part and Audrey 2's part.
It was incredible. Like, honestly, it was crazy.
Just like the vibe of that song, and just, it's like the first time Audrey 2 speaks, and as soon as you hear it, every time I hear it, I'm like, it's just right. It's like, that's the voice that you want to hear coming out of Audrey. No matter who it is, you just want this, like, overpowering, like, the Feed Me, just like that.
It's just draws you in, right? Yep. Like, the writing is incredibly charismatic. The way that character is written, and the lyrics, the melody, it is just like, it's like being seduced. Yep. Whether it's, you know, a male plant or a female plant, you're being seduced.
Oh, 100%.
By the way this song is written, and I mean, I feel like I would feed something to it, because, like, I just.
It gives me this vibe of, like, Hades.
Oh, yeah, definitely that power
kind of thing, how he's, like, feeding me. It's definitely, like,
well, the way that they write this, all the songs in the show are very much to the character. They're all completely different, but they're so written for that character.
They're all good. I mean, I like pretty much all the songs. I don't really have a skipper in there.
But I think a great way to bring this discussion to a bit of a close, have you seen any, and obviously you don't have to name names, have you seen any Little Shop of Horrors production fail?
Oh, mate, yes. So one of my all-time...
I love that. You were just stretching, you were like, oh, get ready.
Yeah, okay. So, like, in terms of, it's not even just a Little Shop of Horrors production fail. It is one of probably the most horrifying, for me, choices I've ever seen on stage. Was I saw a production of Little Shop of Horrors where during Somewhere That's Green, there was a PowerPoint presentation behind the girl playing Audrey, illustrating the imagery that she was singing. So they used a projection screen for a lot of the set. So it was, you know, Skid Row, then it turned into the dentist's office. And this girl comes front of stage to sing Somewhere That's Green. And then she sort of moved off to the stage left. And I was like, oh, yeah, cool, I love it. You don't have to stand in the middle. And then I realized that she's standing in the middle because behind her, the screen is turning into a matchbox house. So it's illustrating the house as she sings a matchbox song. Then as she sings Fence of Real Chain Link, a fence slides across the screen in front of it. Then it turns into a picture of a barbecue for a grill out on the patio. That barbecue then morphs into the circle of a disposal in the sink. And this continued for the whole song. The whole song, all of the imagery of what she was singing was behind on this PowerPoint. And
this is wrong. This is so wrong. This is like, look,
I mean, I feel like she's already pretty descriptive.
Yes. It's very descriptive.
As it is.
And I didn't like it because, whilst I guess it's kind of funny, it highlighted that some of the imagery is quite funny. The screen of the television is actually really small because of the time period it's set in, like a big, enormous 12-inch screen. Yes, it highlighted the comedy of that. But I disliked it because it was not trusting the girl playing Audrey to carry the imagery to take us to that place.
Carry the song.
Yes, it's her big standalone moment. And as we talked about quite at length, she deserves so much more. It's still hashtag justice for Audrey, in my opinion.
Justice for Audrey.
This PowerPoint was happening while she was singing Somewhere That's Green, and it's her moment for us to be taken on a journey with her. And it was just, it's beyond Little Shop of Horrors. It's just not trusting your actor to communicate with your audience. It's like, it's not trusting your audience either to be engaged with what someone's saying. Like, I don't need visual aids. I don't need it spelt out to me in cartoon form. Herson really committed and and thinking about what they're singing and telling the story is the most engaging thing on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And the real moment that you get to connect with an actor when, and that's what's so great about musicals in particular, is it's so vulnerable when someone is on stage, just them singing their true heart's desire. Oh, that's such an important moment to connect with a character. And for me, that was
so
a,
important.
There was,
yeah.
It was a big no for me.
It was a no-no.
It was a no from me.
It's
but
a no
yeah,
from me.
A, it happened during A Little Shop of Horrors, but it probably would have been a no from me if it had been like Bring Him Home with illustrations behind it.
Well, thank you so much, Heather, for discussing all things Little Shop today. It was so amazing.
Well, it's so exciting because, you know, I'm very known for standing in a car park for several hours after a show to talk about it. So this is like an official debrief on it, and I like it. No, I was just going to say that you guys are doing such an amazing job, and I was never listened to a podcast before I listened to yours.
Aww.
You were my very first podcast, and I'm absolutely loving it. So it has
been a
real pleasure to come on and be part of it.
We really appreciate
that.
We
love you so much, and thank you so much for coming.
We did want to ask you before you left, as most of our audience know that we do, and as you know because you listen, we do a bedtime story, and we would love to hear a little bedtime story from you.
Okay.
Is it directing? Is it acting? It can be anything. Go for it.
It's so funny when you think about it, because it makes me realise how many mishaps I've had on stage.
Oh, yeah.
I've fallen off the stage, I've fallen down, and bled on a wedding dress.
Oh my God.
And been in trouble over that. I was in a show once and I had to faint and someone was meant to catch me, and one night they didn't because they were over the other side of stage, and I just fell like flat on my back. But there's some, as you mentioned when you were first generously introducing me, I teach drama, and so this is the story that I love to tell all the kids I teach, because I'm like, this is just sometimes on stage you get thrown a real curveball. So I was in a production of Into the Woods, and the director's concept for Into the Woods was that all of the animals would be played by humans. So Milky White the cow was played by this adorable woman who was like in her 70s, and she was
stop.
The cow. And, it was like the audience loved it. All she would do would be like sit on a stool holding a handbag that looked like udders and pretending to chew, and the audience would be just
God,
hysterical laughter. Every night,
I can see
every
it.
Night she got the biggest applause, and I totally see why. She deserved it. It was so cute.
Yeah.
But as part of this, it meant that you know how there's the cow that's brown that gets the flower on it to be white?
Yep.
So the girl who played one of the stepsisters played that. And I was also, as well as being Lucinda, one of Cinderella's stepsisters, I was Jack's giant hen that he brings back from the giant's house.
Heather, you were the hen.
So I was Jack's giant hen. Yeah, so it's great. So it was the coolest costume. I had this like brightly colored t-shirt on and these red shorts and suspenders and like red shoes, yellow socks, this ridiculous like beanie hat with a feather in. It was... Anyway,
yes.
So I literally had to be a chicken. So the whole scene is like me going bah, bah, and like Jack's talking to me and Little Red, and it's the scene where Jack and Little Red have the conversation where she comes in with her wolf coat, and she doesn't believe that he's been up to the giants, of the giants, and he decides to go back, which is what causes all of the horribleness in Act Two. One night, I'm standing there in this chicken costume, and I come on with Jack, and the two of us are there, and it gets to the end of the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and we're standing there, and no Little Red Riding Hood appears. So we're standing there, and Jack's there, and no Little Red Riding Hood appears, and I can just see the terror in this guy's eyes. Like, he's looking at me going, what do we do? And so bless him, he starts improvising, except that his improvised partner is me. I'm a chicken. So he's trying his best to improvise, and I can't talk because I'm a chicken. So he's going, okay, so, and he's trying to get the plot points. He's obviously, I can see his mind working a million miles an hour, and he's like, okay, I have to go back. I have to go back to the giants. That's the important part of this scene. And he's like, oh, hen, do you think Little Red Riding Hood is coming? And I say, say, and he's like, maybe we should go back up to the giant's house. What do you think? And I'm like, bark, bark, bark. So I'm trying to be like, yes, we should, but in chicken language. And the two of us are just dying. And it goes back and forth until at one point I just go, bark, and just like run off. And he's like, come back, hey, and chases after me. And honestly, we got off stage and the girl who's playing Little Red Riding Hood was mortified. She's like, I realised halfway through, but it was like way too late. I was down the back of the stage. I wasn't going to make it in time. And I just go, you know, always be ready to improvise, guys. Even if you're a chicken, you may still have to just keep on going.
Chickens are a theme in our podcast.
That is crazy.
Thank you so much. That story was absolutely incredible. We loved it.
I'll send you the picture of my chicken.
Yes, everyone, keep an eye out for that. We will definitely post it. You'll see more chicken pictures on our Instagram because we have no shame. No shame here. Yeah.
But thank you so, so much, Heather, for sharing that story with us. Not only that story, but just your thoughts and feelings and opinions on Little Shop of Horrors. This was an amazing discussion. And I know we could go on for hours about this. Like, we covered like maybe half of the points that we had written down.
Yes, look, we've been known to wax lyrical about shows, but that's what's so cool about what you guys are doing. You know, it's an opportunity to talk about shows the way we theater nerds do, but with, on a wider scale, which is really cool. So it's been really fun.
If you guys have any thoughts about Little Shop as well, or you agreed or disagreed with some of the points, make sure you guys message us. We love it when we hear from you and hearing about what you think about the podcast. So make sure you guys message us.
Yeah, let us know any thoughts, feelings, and let us know. We want to do another one of these. So let us know, first and foremost, did you like it? And secondly, what do you want us to do next? I personally think actually a really fun one would be Into the Woods. Mm. But let us know. We'll see what we can do. But anyway, you guys, thank you so, so much for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode. But remember to stay happy, healthy, and safe. We love you all so, so much.
Bye!